Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Kia ora, nor mai, haere mai, and welcome to another Aotearoa Rugby Pod after one of the most talked about test matches in quite a while. The Springboks. Aerial balls left, right and centre. The All Blacks can't hold on to the ball at all. It was not a good game if you're after running rugby. Joining me now to have a look at this game and the other game, of course, Australia versus Argentina. James Parsons in Auckland, Bryn Hall down in Christchurch. And boys, let's start with you, Bryn. About that game. Did you enjoy it?
Well, I did, and I can sense your frustration, Ross, and probably the most the country, to be honest, with what the spectacle that the South Africans put on. But look, I commend them around the way they wanted to play. They were, they talked around implementing a game plan that they wanted to do. And look, when you get the result, to be honest, if Jordy Barrett doesn't kick that kick, we're probably in a different situation around talking around how well the South Africans' plan worked, because look, they kicked a lot more. They had 38 kicks. They nullified our set piece, especially in line-out. Got a lot of steals, especially in that first half. They had three opportunities in that first half, and due to the line-out pressure of the South Africans getting that ball, and Khaleesi, especially in that first opportunity we had in that first half, counter-rucking through and really putting us under pressure, kind of setting the tone, to be honest, for the South Africans. And look, they kicked really well again. They implemented a few different structures around their kick plans. I think in the first half they kicked to the middle of the field, even inside the attacking zone. And I actually saw in that first kick with George Bridge, when he unfortunately dropped their ball, it was a set play with Mopepe. He was right next to Fofa Klerk in the midfield, and they were looking to get into that space, because like we talked about last week in the last couple of podcasts around the middle of the field and that stick space and the pendulum, and they really saw that as a plan. And even though Fofa Klerk's kicked it and wasn't executed really well, George Bridge drops that, and then Nokosi scores off that. So, look, they kicked 38 times. They nullified our set piece, especially at line-out end, with a few scrum pedals and throughout the game. And look, they didn't run it a lot, but look, they did what they wanted, and they got the points that they deserved when they were down there. So, look, I know the Kiwi public would be a little bit frustrated and probably allude to a little bit more around the game. But look, I thought the way that they wanted to implement the game, they did what they wanted. They put us under a lot of pressure through set piece parity, and especially with that rush defense, which we'll probably address a little bit more going into a bit more detail around it. But look, South Africans did what they wanted to do. And look, they could have got the result if Jordy Barrett doesn't nail a 77-minute goal kick in the end.
Yeah, look, I think I enjoyed it from a sense of how tight it was. I think that created a lot of, energy and excitement in our household, because you weren't too sure if we're going to get this result or not. But they, we knew this game plan was coming. They've executed it really well in that Lions series. Probably went away from that accurate execution for a couple of weeks. And then we mentioned last week, styles make fights, and the Springboks really like playing against the All Blacks, and this, stifling of tempo rugby style does get them some good rewards. Bryn, you alluded to loss of line-out. There was four lost line-outs out of, I think, Apostle 21, but those four were in attacking areas, and in past weeks, that's where we've been able to get our game going and, score some points off the back of that. But just as well as set piece, another real key area is the breakdown, and we spoke about it at length, that we weren't going to have it all our way against the Springboks. If we could keep up that physical dominance in and around that area and play fast tempo footy, then we know we'd keep ourselves in this fixture. But because we probably lost more breakdowns than one, it didn't enable us to play on that front foot that we've been used to the last few weeks. So That was a big factor. And I think that, you know, the set piece and the breakdown will be a key area for the All Blacks to rectify going into this week. And I know numbers 1 to 8 will be certainly rolling their sleeves up to make sure they're better for it. And then obviously the error count. I don't think you'll see it again. You know, sometimes you just have these games. George Bridge, one of the best exponents under the high ball, making errors. You know, you don't see that 2 games in a row at all. And even some skill set errors. So used to seeing, you know, it was only a week ago or 2 weeks ago that we're talking about, you know, Jacobson's short ball to Rico and the skill set showing from 1 to 23. You don't lose that in a week. It certainly wasn't the execution they would have liked. So, again, that sort of skill set under that line speed, D pressure, they'll be looking at. But there's a couple of things they can take out of it as well. I thought they made really good gains when they were forced back in. Cody Taylor's try, he forced back in and made some inroads up the middle there as well. So there's enough good and bad, but as we know with the New Zealand public, they're quite critical. But let's all be honest, we won the test. And a lot of the, I suppose, the reviewing of it has been about the Springboks. But I think you've got to commend our men for, you know, hanging in there, having the mental fortitude to work their way back into this game and sneak home with a victory.
I suppose the hard part for me is more theoretical than actually, you know, when it comes to the winning and losing of games, yeah, you want to win ugly if you have to, you know, or whatever. But William Webb Ellis did not pick up a rugby ball and run with it so you could get incessant box kicking. Is it at the heart and soul of rugby, as far as obviously Kiwis are concerned? This is a product you've got to sell.
Yeah, I think that's the problem. Like, no, and it's probably us Kiwis, probably it's a style that we're not used to. Like, look, we haven't played the South Africans in a couple of years, and we've watched that British and Irish Lions series, and it was a kick-a-thon, and it was more so around field position, set-piece parity, and then obviously putting teams under pressure through the kicking game. So, look, I think it's we struggle as Kiwis to understand it, but I don't see it that way. I think, look, if the South Africans, you look at the last two test matches against the Australians when they did play, they wanted to play a little bit more in through not executing really well under pressure and getting the points that they wanted to, playing a lot, they went back and they even said in the, after that review they didn't want to implement what they wanted to do. And so they made it a real clear plan coming in. They went back to that 38 kicks, which they did, which is around a number that they had against the British and Irish Lions, and really put the skill set and defensive line speed pressure, which we saw on the weekend. Even though they were tackling at 77%, the amount of times that the winger would get high and put the All Blacks skill set under pressure due to that line speed that we saw in that British and Irish Lions series. So I know you talk about William Wemalis and his idea around running with the ball to score a try, but look, I think if they go toe-to-toe with the All Blacks, with the attacking brain and want to play rugby, I think they're going to fall second best. So moving forward to the 2023 World Cup, they might want to adapt and be able to play that brand to be able to play with rugby and play with the ball in hand to score points. But at this stage, I think that the plan that they have, they're going to implement, and even Khaleesi said after the game as well, this is the way we want to play. Even the only time that I did question it was possibly that 77th minute when Yanchis puts that box kick up. And it was really interesting to hear Khaleesi's message after the game saying that, no, it was exactly what we're talking about on the field as players. We wanted to go through that. We really wanted to put the skill set under pressure. So it's going to be a clear plan moving forward, especially for next week. I don't think they'll tinker too much. But I think one good thing that Jacques brought up as well, and it's probably good for our viewers to probably understand as well, is that what they're seeing in their attack shape is one-on-one opportunities. So whether that be one-on-one with the defender with ball in hand or it's a one-on-one in the air, they're taking that as a win to be able to get that 50-50 contest or beat that defender in attack. So, you know, when you've got a really good defensive line like the All Blacks have, whether that be 13 players or two in the back, and or there might be one time that there's 14 in the line, where's the space going to be? It's going to be a contestable kick like they did, whether that's off Fuff de Klerk, Andre Pollard, and they've got a real opportunity to do that. They even did it inside the 22 or 30-metre zone. But, you know, if that ball bobbles and goes backwards and there's two South Africans chasing for that ball, that's a try. So I think the interpretation around what South African are seeing for an opportunity compared to what New Zealanders are seeing with the attack rugby running brand, it's a little bit different. So I think they won't change a lot out of it.
I suppose putting a bomb up underneath the opposition sticks is a traditional rugby tool, isn't it? It's something that was used for years and years and maybe hasn't been as much recently because you fight hard to get that territory. But Jipper, when it came to that 77th minute kick from Herschel Yankees and the chance maybe to take a drop goal, it seems very un-South African not to go for the drop goal as well.
Yeah, well, I suppose they were quite far out, so it would have been an ambitious ploy, I think, for a droppy. But even before that, they'd made some good bends on the edge by putting the ball through the hands, as in the Springboks. I think Van Meulen ran down the right-hand side and would have made 20, 25 metres from them using the ball through their hands. So they do have the ability, if the space is there, to go there. And I was surprised that they went to the box kick, and that's great that Sia says that's the plan. But in the end, that probably lost them the game. And that's the reality of it, is they put themselves in a position to win it. And I think there's still a balance. It's just like when we talk about teams with a lot of flair with ball in hand, it's having the balance to play the tactical kicking game as well. Well, I think there just needs to be a little bit, I think it was around the 47th minute when it's a good line-out ball off the top, quick ball, and Faf puts up a box kick, I think, on the 22. And I'm not saying it's the wrong tactic, it's just they've worked so hard to get down there. They are quite good at being dominant in that 22 collision area. And as we know, Bryn, like when you get into the 22-metre, it's almost forwards roll their sleeves up to suck the defence and to build up an opportunity for the box to expose. And that's when I thought they could have come into their own a little bit with their physical prowess, with their, you know, their latch carriers and getting Marks and co running over that gain line rather than having one ruck and then kick.
Yeah, I agree. Because I think, look, every time you play a South African team with how big they are and such big ball carriers, and especially when they want to latch, they've got a great ability to be able to get the guy in behind, hold on to them, and push them through contact. They do that really, really well in the South African team. So, look, I think possibly moving forward, they might want to keep continuing to have those attacking kicks where they put box kicks off Faf or Hondre Pollard to be able to get in that position around a contestable 50-50 contest just outside the line. But yeah, I think that marrying up of being a see that opportunity, but then letting the forwards be able to exert a bit of pressure onto the All Blacks, you know, let them defend 7, 8, 10 phases just for them being able to have those big ball carriers. Sometimes you can give it out to the backs to give them opportunity on the edge because, you know, the All Blacks gave away 10 penalties, but they're just not stressing them enough defensively. So as you know, Chip, when you're defending that high phase count, and even if you are a good defensive team, you're either going to come through 7 points or you're going to get 3 points due to the ill discipline of the defensive team. So, and then also as well, like Faf de Klerk, he's got a great grubber game in behind as well. You know, he scored in that British and Irish Lions series, whether it be off line out attack or just around the ruck. You know, and the last week when they played Australia, went down the blind side early in that second half and puts a kick in behind. So I think it's like you said, it's marrying up those two things around the kick game. They're going to implement that if they do see the space, but just rolling their sleeves up and asking the questions of All Blacks for that 7 to 8, 10 phases. So then, you know, you can't come up with a try, at least exerting a bit of energy of defensively from the All Blacks and asking them questions instead of just putting up a 50-50 contest in the air.
Yeah, and I think they would have seen, opportunities that RG sort of showed on the switch play. They've been very effective on the switch play in the British and Irish Lions. So I think they just shouldn't underestimate their ability to play that other style of footy or the traditional, physical, dominant, get over the gain line style. But also, you know, they had Elton Yanchis on the bench for a reason as well. And I felt maybe he could have been a key part. You know, the Lions, when they went on that great run and they're making home finals and were outstanding in Super Rugby, it was through a lot of flair and entertaining footy as well as that physical dominance going to the corner. I think Malcolm Mark scored about 25 tries off the back of a maul. So they have the players there that can go between the two games. And I just think they should utilise it a little bit more and not always just go for that, especially one phase. Right?
Yeah.
Defending takes gas out of you. So the more you can make players defend, the more opportunity you may get later. It might not happen straight away there in that moment, but it saps energy and it might create an opportunity for you to expose later.
Especially if in that 22 jump or that kind of 30-metre zone. Because, look, I think they're going to implement their game plan around suffocating with their box kicks to be able to get out of the half. You know, LaRue, Pollard, they're going to kick to be able to get that field position. And then once they do get into that 22 or 30-metre attacking zone, rolling up their sleeves and holding on to their ball. Because, look, like I agree with you, Jip, you know, if you do that 10 to 12 phases and you might not get that try there, but it might be a penalty or you might knock it on or whatever, the back end of the game, that last 10, 15 minutes with having those consistent high phase counts early in the game, it's going to tire out the forwards. So, yeah, it's going to be interesting to see if they do implement holding on a little bit more. Because, look, I know set piece wise, if they have a line out there, They're going to go for a line-out drive and line-out maul to be able to exert pressure that way, which I thought the All Blacks actually defended really well. We'll probably talk about that a little bit more. But, yeah, I just think just throwing a little bit more and possibly Yantri's coming on a little bit earlier, you might help with that running game at the back end of games.
I wouldn't mind Bryn just touching on the mastery of the box kick from Faf, because it appears he has so many more options than I think I've seen from any other halfback with his box kick. Like, the one that went to George Bridge was almost half wipers kick, half box kick. You can't know quite where he's going with it.
Well, I think first and foremost, like, his execution of his box kick is world class. And so what I mean around that, it's the distance that he's kicking it at. So ideally in that first test match when he played the Australians, or let's use the Australian game, for the first game as an example, he was kicking it a little bit too long. So he was kicking, whether it be just inside the 22 or just outside the 22, and he was kicking it towards halfway, which if it has the right height, and it's a really good chase with no escorts, you know, Nikosi or Nomalpepe will be able to get up to the ball. But with how teams are doing it now, and even thought the New Zealanders did pretty well around escorting you, it's really hard for those defenders to be able to jump up for the ball and contest for it. But in these kind of last two test matches, he's hit around that kind of just past the 10-metre line. So it's like a 19, 20-metre kick or 22-metre kick, which gives a little bit more time for Nomalpepe and Nikosi to get up for that ball. But I think what they are doing really well as well is that they've got an open side chaser as well, whether that be Itzebeth, he's done it a couple of times, or might be Van Meulen. So as an escort player, ideally it's a halfback or the last forward on that edge. And so those two guys are usually going to be able to escort the Malpepe or the Nikosi. But on the guys on the open side, it's a lot easier because you don't see it coming. So you saw a couple of times Itzebeth or Van Meulen and test matches have been able to get up for that ball. First and foremost, due to Fuff's execution of his kick, and then those two guys chasing. So having both guys, or both rabbits, both people chasing for the ball, it's a lot harder to escort. And that example you used in the very first half when it was in the middle of the field, like I talked about, when you've got the two guys in the back with the pendulum, they've got that space sorted. So, you know, with Faf de Klerk's normal kicks, the two guys are already there. But it was obviously a plan in place to be able to go to that middle, and it's those two guys that are going to be able to come forward, and they're moving in a different direction. And so It was a plan move for Malpepe to get up for that and trying to get into that space. But I think what Faf does really, really well, it's his execution of his kick, and then a flow on from that, it's the chase of Nikosi, the outside forward, whether that be Van Meulen or Itzebeth, they're getting up for the ball, making it really, really hard for like the likes of Jordy Barrett and George Bridge, especially in that first half. They really struggled because the length of the box kick was short enough for them to get up, and it was too far for them to chase. And the escort game as well was a little bit off when you've got the open side runner running at the same time.
So, Jipper, what's the tactic there for the All Blacks in order to create the block to give George Bridge and Jordy Barrett the time to not have to worry about those runners that are coming at them?
Yeah, well, I think it's always going to be things like that you can control is obviously set-piece pressure so that they don't get good first game line carry, and then obviously, having a good crack at that first ruck to try and slow it down or disrupt it so that they're not kicking on their terms. You're putting some form of pressure on Faf that he has to, you know, rush the kick that can potentially mean it isn't as accurate as we saw on the weekend. So those sorts of areas that I suppose the forwards can focus on and controlling and looking to help out the back three. And then the reality is a bit of kick pressure, you know, in and around that ruck from your big men and then the escorts. But I don't know what it was about Townsville, but it did seem to be quite hard for them to pick up that ball when it was, you know, obviously put quite high. You know, Jordy Barrett was great. He was clean in the air, but I was just surprised. Like, there had to be more to it because George Bridge is such a great exponent of the high catch. And a lot of the times there was pressure, but not massive amount, especially if we look at that try. You'd think 10 times out of 10 that George Bridge would take that. So there's things that they can control, but I do go back to, I don't think we'll see those errors under the high ball like we saw this week again.
So you're Ian Foster, Bryn. Do you make changes, or do you go to your team and say, this is how we've got to change as a group and we'll carry on with the same team?
Oh, it's tough because, well, it's tough. You've also got guys that missed out and probably played really well and probably warranted off selection. I think Sebi Reese, for example, you know, he's played really, really well in the test matches that he has. And look, even when he plays for the Crusaders as well, he's great aerially as well. So look, I think the reason why they did pick George and Will, they talked around a little bit taller and with that height difference and knowing that that was going to come. But look, I don't think George is going to make that mistake again. Jipper brought up a pretty good point around, look, it's uncharacteristic for him to be able to drop balls like that, especially the first try. Like, that's not going to happen again. That's just a 9 times out of 10, George takes that, calls a mark, and then kicks it out. So, and a couple of times as well, probably got just his alignment wrong and been able to go up for the ball. And look, I think he'll be on that turtle a lot this week trying to justify a few things. But at the same time, you've got to give guys opportunities with Sevu. You know, it was probably a 50-50, whether it be George or Sevu playing on the weekend. So they could change it there, but look, I don't really know, because I think it's a real 50-50 call, because look, Sevu's played really well. George got the opportunity, would probably like to rectify a few things, but whether he's going to get given that opportunity due to his performance on the weekend, you're just going to have to wait and see what Fozzie and the coaches decide after that.
I think he might be coming back into the selection mix, so, you know, Dalton and Anton Leonard-Brown. So there will be some tough decisions, I suppose, as there have been every test. Luke Jacobson having to pull out late, you know, he might come back in for an opportunity to see how he goes against the Springboks. And you know, Ethan Blackett has just made every post a winner. Every time he's been on that field, he has just been exceptional. So he's right in the mix to even retain his spot, really, for the effort that he did. You know, if you look about, you know, celebrating that the magnificent game-winning kick of Jordy Barrett, you watch who's doing the low chop tackle to allow Quinn Tupia access to that ball to get the turnover. It's Ethan Blackett. Right? He's just a man possessed. Big engine, big body, and doing everything he can to remain in that jersey. So there will be some tough selection issues this week, but I do sometimes feel that All Black management will go back to saying, yeah, the 23 needs to go back out there and rectify it themselves and show us what you can do. As I say, the test match was still won. There were still a lot of positives, but I suppose those error counts, we spoke about the Wallabies weeks prior, that those are things you can control as players, and if you can control them, then the game could be different. There was still plenty of flair shown if you look at Will Jordan's try, the ability to line break, I think 25 defenders beaten. They made great gains up the middle of the field. So, look, I think it'll be pretty close to the same 23. Any changes that will be able to be around, you know, maybe because they were originally named last week, like a Jacobson and maybe a Leonard Brown and Reeks could move to the wing, or there's a few mix and match. But I think for the most part, it'll be pretty similar.
Chip, we talked about in previous weeks, you know, that this could be the big test for Kita Ioane going up against a box pack doing that. How do you think he came out of that challenge?
Yeah, look, I think it was a good physical battle. You know, I think everyone's been wrapped with what they've seen of him in the wide channel with ball in hand. But, you know, all back forwards had to roll their sleeves up and make sure they tried to dominate. And I think Akira was pretty, you know, sound in that area. The one thing I really liked seeing in this game is if you watch when Cody Taylor breaks, you watch the two men that react the fastest. One's the try scorer in Jordan. But Akira Ioane, even when you know Jordan's going to score that try, he's sprinting up the backside just in case he doesn't make it. And that's been the big shift that I love seeing in Aki, is work off the ball to put himself in the position. He's busy in and around the ruck when he makes a tackle. He's back to his feet. His big stats, which is back in game stats. So when you go to the ground on a tackle and how fast you get to your feet so that you can do double efforts, you know, he was big in that area. So I think for the most part, he can be happy. There's no doubt that Akira likes wide channels and getting the ball in the hand, so he'll be looking to do a little bit more of that. But, you know, he certainly held his own in a physical battle.
It's a pretty tough call now, especially when you think of Sam Crane coming back towards the end of the year. Obviously, the captain will get his chance, but, geez, that loose forward mix, you know, you mentioned Ethan Blackadder, Dalton Papali'i coming back, you know, Luke Jacobson was supposed to play. I can't remember which one of you made the big call earlier in the year that Ethan Blackadder could be an open side flanker at test level, but that's appeared to be true. This loose forward battle, Is this the key time now this weekend for Akita and whoever else goes in there, their Bryn, to really make that stand and lock down the spots in the long term, considering how it went at the breakdown on the weekend?
Yeah, look, I think so. I think one test match doesn't really define with the form that you are in. And we've talked around a lot around Aki's shifts around his, we've always known around how his attacking ability out on the edge, and he's done that, you know, against the Australians and the Argentinians as well. But, you know, he'll be able to find the learnings. And it's not just him. There's a lot of guys, they talk around the improvement that they want to have in their game, not just on defensively in that sense, but, you know, they're 23 turnovers. So with their skill execution, they'll be able to try and fix that and marry that up as well. But I think what it is, it has done, it's just given more depth to the team. You know, we've talked around guys taking the opportunity. Jacobson's taken his opportunity. Aki's played well in test matches. And Ethan Blackadder, you know, he's played six. He could play six, seven or eight, you know, and he's played, you know, came in late on the weekend and played really well. So I think, you know, we talk around Aki, he'll get another opportunity. And, you know, I reckon he'll make the learnings around what he wanted to do in that test match to be a little bit better. But I think, you know, first and foremost, it's great to have the selection headaches for the group, because there might be injuries in games. And like you said, Blackadder came in with Luke Jacobson coming out, and these guys are making real good shifts and making every post to winner with playing really, really well. And that's all you could ask if you're a coach, giving that guy the confidence to select him and coming in late and then doing what you need to do for the team. So, you know, we also think around Shannon Frizzell. He's another guy that's back home playing for Tasman, who we said through Super Rugby Aotearoa and Trans-Tasman was in tremendous form. So, and when you've got guys like that back home, it shows how well the loose forward trio at the moment is going, and Sam Kane as well, the captain, and, you know, he'll be back in the mix for that India tour. So I think we're in a really good stead, and just continue to keep building that depth for, you know, a couple of years' time when the 2023 World Cup goes on in France.
I don't think anyone in that loose forward trio, if you have a good performance one week, will ever feel like it's their jersey, or they've got a right to that selection because of that competition. And I don't think that's ever the case in the All Black jersey, but more so in that loose forward trio. So, you know, your only currency is your last performance. And every week is massive in that sense. And this is the same for this week, massive week this week, but it doesn't guarantee you selection for the next week or for the next 6 months or anything like that, because there's so much versatility and so many guys offering up so much. You know, you said about us talking about Ethan Blackadder being able to play open side at All Black level, because I think, you know, his best performance for the Crusaders this year was against the Reds when he played open side, and no one had sort of seen him there before. Well, I certainly had him, and I was seriously impressed, and he just backed that up again. And I don't think, you know, from an All Black forward standard, in terms of the breakdown and making those shifts, I think they'll all be looking at themselves and just thinking they just weren't nailing their own individual roles, and maybe distracted about thinking about someone else's role rather than their own. And they'll tighten that up and get that focus real zeroed in on themselves for the benefit of the team plans and game plans. And I think we'll see a different beast come this Saturday.
You mentioned the lineouts before. Scrums and lineouts were both a bit difficult. Is it an easy fix for them? I mean, were you surprised by the difficulties?
I think it's an easy fix, but never surprised when you play the Springboks. They're a hard team to set piece against. It's their, I suppose, bread and butter. They love it. But as I said, you know, 17 wins out of 21, there were four losses. I suppose what they'll be looking at is those four losses were in key attacking field position, where the Springboks chance their arm to get up and challenge for possession. So it's just coming up with alternatives. And you would have seen a number of times after they lost one, the next lineout, they almost got there so quick and went fast before the Springboks could get set. And I think that's the key. So then obviously when they're coming to penalties, coming up with a plan or a manipulation in the lineout where they can know or guarantee they can win the ball, but not always, I suppose, you know, if the Springboks give you the front, if you look at that driving more, Ethan wins it at the front, but it gives the Springboks that angle to push them towards the sideline, which is the dream angle, really, when you're defending a maul, is if they win at the front, you can just sort of hoover it on an angle towards the sideline, and the All Blacks obviously shared, they actually did quite well to shear around, but then Artie eventually got taken out. But it just puts the Springboks right in the race when you win at the front there. So coming up with variations, and I wouldn't mind seeing some of Brad Moore's stuff, you know, in and around Bryn that you guys had when he was coaching the Crusaders. I think, you know, maybe not going to the driving more. They've shown that they want to take them on there, and that's fine, but coming up with some special plays that I think could catch them off guard because they're so fixated on that driving maul area.
Yeah, I thought that as well, Jip. I thought, you know, possibly having the kind of, you know, you send the halfback and the winger or the halfback down the blind side, and then you've got the hooker coming out with this seven giving it back to the hooker, those kind of transition plays to be able to get them thinking, because I think you are right, Jip. They nullified it really, really well with, you know, they all did it. I won't go into too much of the around the detail. It seemed they all had the similar direction, especially when they gave them the front, could share that towards the sideline and use that sideline to their friends. So I think, you know, a possibility, whether it just be a quick, you know, the Australians have done it really well in the past couple of weeks around getting it out, having the seven take the bunter off and getting into that transition with, whether that be, it's been with Karevi or Kotobeti, getting into that transition, being able to ask different questions, because I think, you know, they might continue to keep driving on that, but I think just having a bit of variation around getting them thinking, if it's not going to be a drive, oh, they're going to go in that transition area, or it could just be over the throw, a tempo, straight quickly, a real quick throw, going into that transition, whether it be the 12, straight over the top or the winger, just to get into that transition zone, because yeah, they nullified it really well, and that could be a solution for them moving forward to have those little special plays and to get that back of that line out, start getting them to think around, is it going to be a drive or we're going to be able to, or do we have to hold off because there might be a bit of animation around that transition, whether that be with a winger or a hooker coming out off a little special play that Brad Moore has had at the Crusaders in the past.
The transition zone, Bryn, that's going from the set piece into the attack and the bit that happens in between?
Yeah, so if you just have an example, so the hooker, usually he's at the back of the line out with the last player. It's usually the hooker. Sometimes it can be a seven or a nine, but it's that guy who's at the back of the line out and then the first defender in the back line that's out at 10, which is usually a seven or a 10 possibly. It's usually a seven. So that transition zone is called, you know, between the two and the seven, and there's a bit of space because obviously the seven, the first defender, is back 10 metres. So that's all we're talking around, just being able to get them to ask questions and really get that two and seven and in that defensive phase to get them to start thinking around, is it going to be a drive? Is it going to be an over the top with the 12 coming into that space or a winger coming in or a special play that you've seen with the Crusaders or most New Zealand teams actually sending the seven, sending the nine or a winger down the blind side to hold that front, and then you cover around the back of that transition with a hooker or a winger in that kind of space asking questions and going through that transition to get over the advantage line like the Australians have with Karevi in the Argentinian series the last couple of test matches.
And I think if they start doing that early, then they can go back to their driving more later, because you've started the Springboks to think defensively, oh, okay, we've got to be worried about the transition zone, or we've got to be worried about that overthrow. So they're a little bit slow to hitting the maul to stop it, whereas I think in those early parts of either half, that they, as in the Springboks defensively, are going to be loaded up, ready to smack a maul. And that might be the opportunity to manipulate into those transition zone. And then when they start thinking about that, then you can go to your driving maul and try and do everything on your terms to put yourself in the best position to execute and get points.
So is David Harvili kind of the victim of Samu Karevi's success, do you think? Because they came at him hard.
I think that probably he's a victim of his own success. I think it was a much better display defensively. I know their stats say 77, but they just seemed a lot more connected, a lot more, I suppose, working in threes, whereas, you know, you've got the middle guy that's on the main ball carry and the guy inside and outside of him, and they created a secure nature like that. And I think they'd been broken so much through Samu weeks previous that, yeah, that might have sharpened their focus. But, you know, Davey's been so effective of, you know, getting through between half gaps and getting an offload or just carrying strong and busting through up the other side and scoring tries. So I just think they were aware of his skill set and how well he'd been playing. And if he could have got a half break and linked with Rico, I think that would have been a big concern for them. So they were thinking, if we can just shut him down, it doesn't get to a Rico, it doesn't get to a Will Jordan or a Jordy Barrett out wide, it almost stops it dead where it is. So you'll see, I'm no doubt, that they'll make adjustments around, I suppose, their foot speed or depth to be able to create space on that edge going forward.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sports-ad-free. That's amazon.com/sports-ad-free to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Bryn, do you see, considering what you said earlier about Jacques Nienaber saying, well, we just want to carry on the same way, and see Khaleesi post-match saying, yeah, we're happy with that tactic, that after three straight losses, that's just a public front from the Springboks? Do you think there might be some questioning that they shouldn't lose four in a row and maybe some things will slightly mix up for this test match?
Personally, I don't think so. I think just with the messaging that when they've been saying it, they've just been pretty adamant around they're going to play this way. And I think I possibly thought last week when they lost, a couple of weeks ago, they lost to the Wallabies. The post-match interview was really interesting for me because they talked around that they needed to go back, look at the review and look at everything to see if they needed to change, because they just had lost two test matches to the Wallabies and they were questioning around what they were doing. But then they came out and they played exactly how the way, which they must have felt, they feel like it's their DNA. So they would have gone away from that review and said, look, right, yep, we've lost two test matches, but what's our identity? What's going to give us the best opportunity to beat the All Blacks with the next two test matches? And it was evident on the weekend. You know, they went back to the 38 kicks, being able to put their under pressure due to their contestable kicks and winning that field position battle, and then, you know, trying to get points through that way. So look, I don't think it's going to change a lot. I think what we have talked around is that when they do get into that 22-metre zone, they've just got to ask questions of the All Blacks. Yes, they might get a penalty here and there just through ill discipline, but I think you've just got to ask questions of the All Blacks when they are in that zone, because they have such strength in their physical players that they do have. And when they are playing around the corner with Etzebeth and Van Meulen and those big ball carriers around the corner, it's going to ask questions of the All Blacks. And like I said before, if it's that kind of 7 to 10 phases that they're going to defend, it's going to tire them out, and at least it's going to sap energy from the All Blacks. But, you know, if they go one phase and they're inside the 22, and yes, I can see the reasoning behind, well, they might want to put a contestable kick in for a 50-50, but if they don't get that right, then it just, all that pressure to get down there and all that time that they've had to get down there, it's just wasted. So I think moving forward, possibly in that 22-metre zone or 30-metre zone, when they are attacking in the All Blacks half, I think that's where the questions they might need to be asking around, all right, we just need to exert a little bit more pressure here, play on top of them, and if the kick opportunity is there, they'll take it like they always do. But I think they just need to ask a few more questions with phases and being able to build more pressure with the All Blacks and ask them a little bit more questions and zap them defensively.
Okay, should we move on to the next game? I think we've got into the high balls and the ways that the All Blacks and the Springboks went pretty thoroughly there. The Wallabies versus the Pumas. What did you make of that victory, Chipper?
Oh, look, I think it was a confident side. Have found their mojo, or found a game plan that works for them. Again, a real low turnover count, high possession, high territory, risk-free footy. And that they're winning collisions, that's allowing them to make better decisions in attack. And defensively tackling at 90%, you know, if there's a body, they're going round the legs, looking to access that breakdown pressure and get some turnovers in and around there. Probably didn't have as much impact as I'd like around those breakdown turnovers, but always tough against the RG boys. But I think I think the best exponent of it is the work off the ball of Corombetti and Callaway. If you look at Reece Hodges' first try where he just busts through, it's the extra body of Corombetti, the blindside wing, that comes all the way around and pops up on his outside. And if you remember Ikitau's second try last week that we spoke about in depth with Karevi's down line and then Corombetti getting through and giving the offload to Ikitau to get that try, the work that they're doing off the ball to take themselves from their blind wing spot to pop up on the open, to be that extra attacker that attracts defence attention. And then it's exactly the same. Kotobedi popped outside Reece Hodge, two Argentinian players went onto him, and then it made a passive tackle for the inside Argentinian defender on Hodge. Hodge is a big body. He's just like a Geordie Barrett. It's all too easy for him. But it's those sorts of plays. I think, you know, Callaway scored one late in the game, doing the same with an inside ball from James O'Connor. So it reminds me a hell of a lot, to be honest, of the 2012-13 Chiefs. And their wingers were really hard working in the kick chase, really hard working off the ball to provide maybe a bit of a threat in and around the ruck off nine, or popping up as an extra attacker on the open side. And that's the hardest thing defensively, is you're looking up and you're saying, I'm on Reece, and then out of nowhere, Kotobedi pops up, and it makes you second guess and hesitate. And because he's such a threat, they pushed off to him. And you know, that's what I mean by the Aussies are making great decisions, because they're, you know, buying time for themselves by winning those collisions. Hodge has ball in two hands, and it's an easy show and go. But it's been implemented over the other weeks. You could hear them saying just before Karevi's try, patience, patience. So they're a real well-disciplined side. They want to hold on to that ball. They want to recycle it. They will not give you anything. If you want to get points, you're going to have to earn them. And that's what I think, you know, you're starting to see. And I think they're starting to believe in the way they're playing and the game plan they've got, and they're starting to really enjoy playing it.
So, Bryn, Marika Kotobete, he is out for a little while before rejoining them on the Northern Tour. James O'Connor is back in the side now. How do you reshuffle as well to be backline, considering those two parts?
Oh, I think it's great depth in Australia. And I think, look, you've even got a guy like Jordan Pataia, who's been on the bench the last, you know, four or five test matches. So he's probably itching for an opportunity to take that spot, you know, whether they change away Callaway, put him on the left wing and put Jordan Pataia on the right wing moving forward. That's one way they can go. And then you've got James O'Connor, who I thought played really well and had a great injection. You know, that try that he had with Callaway, with that, what was it, that was in the 69th minute, roving around. And, you know, I thought the bench as well from Australia was really, really well with McDermott, Swain, even Simon, those boys coming on and really asking questions. And I thought it led into, you know, O'Connor to be able to play on front and making good decisions and with his attacking game, because he really did attack the line in that, you know, 22 minutes that he did come on and ask really good questions at that time. So, you know, whether they want to see him as a 10 behind Quaid or you chuck him back at 15, and I know Reece Hodge was at 15 on the weekend, but we've talked about that dual pivot, and especially with his communication skills, being a 10 the last couple, you know, in that kind of Reds campaign, playing 10 and different eyes and having that 10-15 combination with Quaid and James O'Connor, you know, it could be something they want to have moving forward with the likes of putting Pataia on the wing or Hodges, a utility back for them at the moment. So they've got enough there to be able to cater towards Kotobete, who I think, again, has been fantastic in his ability off the ball, like Jip talks around. It asks questions of the defence, and it comes back to his work rate. A lot of the time you see him covering defensively. There was one phase they showed in the game is that he went from one sideline all the way to the other sideline, didn't make the tackle, but then counter-rucked that ruck and made the ball available for the Australians. So, you know, his work rate is immense and something that's really ingrained into them. And I think David Rennie was perfect around that. You look around that 2012 and 2013 Chiefs chip, you have the likes of Tikita Tuma, who would just be very similar to Kotobete, not in stature around his physicality, but the work rate off the ball and giving guys like Callaway and Hodge with that first try the opportunities to be able to score points. So it will be interesting to see how they do go. You've also got Tom Banks, who's played good footy when he's come on or played. So they've got enough there. And I think the greatest thing about the Australians at the moment is they've got belief. And you look at that 2012 and 2013 Chiefs, it didn't take long for Rennie to be able to really get some confidence with those boys. And once you have it, you know, it's three consecutive wins for the Australians. And you know, they've got another test match on the weekend, and they've got the India tour to look forward to. But, you know, I think, you know, the confidence is the best thing about a really good team. And so it's been great work. They've made massive solutions around how they played the All Blacks, implemented a lot of things that they wanted to get right, which they didn't get right. And they've implemented it really well against the South Africans and the Argentinians on the weekend.
And Chipper, when you look at this Wallabies side, considering what's just been said there, and going off to the Northern Tour, the experience they've got would make you think that they should probably be able to carry this on when they're overseas.
Oh, 100%. I think they've got depth in position. They've got a next guy up mentality, which is no surprise. So I don't see their form dipping, because I think the biggest challenge they've had, they potentially might have overcome, is their actual belief in themselves and what they're capable of. And we said if they could get their errors out of their game, they'd be in fixtures because of the style they play and not giving opposition opportunity. And that's what they're doing at the moment: 60% possession, 60% on territory, and you know, a low turnover count and a low penalty count. It just starves the opposition of any opportunity to break you down and more opportunity for you to do so. We spoke about, you know, maybe the Springboks running a little bit more to make the All Blacks tackle a few more times. Well, you know, the Argies tackled, you know, nearly double the amount that the Wallabies had to, and that, you know, they sort of came back into that game around the 55-minute mark, and then there was the yellow card to Kremer, but, you know, the damage had been done with how much defence they had to do. But I still think the only one thing they'd be looking at is that I thought they made some really good headway in their line-out D, but went away from it on the weekend a couple of times, being pinged further out, and obviously once finding themselves over their try line. So still a work on area there for them to be consistent in that. But outside of that, it's pretty clean going, and it doesn't really change when the subs came on as well, which also shows you that systems and the standards are spread across the group. And again, I'm not surprised by that with who they've got in charge. So I have no doubt that those standards and expectations will be you know, driven to flow on into the end of your tour.
I think one thing that they have got right previously, you know, we talked around the balance of play that they have. They played a little bit too much when they played against the All Blacks, and so, you know, they had the ball for a lot of times. And even though that on the weekend they had majority of territory and position, but they're making much better decisions around when they have the ball and when they don't. So we've consistently talked around we've talked around their phase play shape, how much better they've gotten. The Rovers, we talked around the example with Korobeti floating around Hodge for that first try, and Callaway's second try, how they float in and around the 10 for the first receiver. But the decision making that they are making, and they're not putting themselves under pressure due to holding on to the ball too long. So I think going to the Northern Hemisphere, where they will probably play similar styles to the South Africans with their kick, with their contestable kicking game and being able to win the field position battle, they've got a good understanding around the learnings around when they did play South Africa. That's probably what they might get in the Northern Hemisphere, or possibly Wales. You know, they with Wayne Pivac, they want to play a little bit more. So taking the learnings that they did with the running rugby with the All Blacks and being able to get a good game understanding of when we do play, when we don't play, which has probably been a massive massive positive for the All Blacks, sorry, not for the All Blacks, the Wallabies in the last probably 2-3 test matches, taking the learnings from the All Black tests and then implementing that for the South Africans, and then also implementing attack with the kicking game against the Argentinians in their last test match as well.
Let me throw a hypothetical at you then, Bryn. If they were to play the All Blacks again now, how much different would that series look? Do you think there'd be a chance that the Wallabies pick up a win now?
I think it would be. I think they'd ask a lot more questions because they've taken the solutions around what we've just talked about. And so, you know, the ability of the click attack from the All Blacks has just always been a great weapon. And the click attack is off turnover ball, whether that be off a long phase count, you know, consistently, you know, the Wallabies had a lot of time with they had high phase counts, and they did a lot of intercepts in those first two test matches. But the solutions that they've made around their phase play attack, around having their structure, their set structure on the edge, would be perfect for the All Blacks, because it asks them questions and it takes away that bridge pass and putting them under pressure, where they're more so that's a 14-point try, because they've held on for the ball for so long and they're giving the All Blacks an opportunity to be able to take it away. And so, and then I think also their attack as well, with their line out, you know, they've got a lot of variety at the moment, whether they're playing specials around the transition with Kerevi, getting some really good pay off that. And then we talk around Tate McDermott on those first two test matches, even Nick White as well, their ability to play on top of teams and then be able to use that, go around the heart defense, ask questions, but then if they don't find they want to get that there, and there's opportunities to go out wide. The edge play attack, which I just explained, is they're getting a lot more pay and being a lot more patient and clinical when they are in that 22-metre zone. So I think it would be a different encounter. I think, you know, the learnings from what they've had, and if they implemented that into the All Blacks, I think, you know, it'd be a much more closer encounter, and they wouldn't have as many blowout scores that they did due to their own mistakes, to be honest. They weren't as clinical as enough on those first two test matches, and they're a lot more clinical now and taking the opportunities and getting points in those last three test matches.
I just think, as well as that, it's been their defence. They're not running out of their system as much against the All Blacks. They created opportunities because they're trying to solve issues in ones and twos rather than as a team. You know, tackling at 90% on the weekend, they're at 90-odd the week before, and they're all working for each other inside and out, and it's like a gold Aussie wall at the moment. And that's a big factor in their success as well. Yep, they're making less errors and giving themselves opportunity on attack, but they're stopping teams from scoring points, which is probably more important at this level than scoring them yourself.
You mentioned Bryn, the halfbacks, both Tate McDermott and Nick White, and their contribution. Probably a few weeks ago, we would have thought that there's no way that Tate McDermott wouldn't be the top guy. He was looking $1 million. Nick White now appears to maybe be their top guy. How do you think that that's fleshing out? Do you think that it is Nick White?
Well, I think it wasn't by choice. I think Tate McDermott at the time had a little bit of a calf injury, and it could be still a little bit of an issue. Even saw it strapped on the weekend. So, you know, through Tate's injury and probably a little bit tightness around the calf, it gave Nick White an opportunity. You talk around opportunities with the All Blacks, the guys coming in and making real big statements and having great games due to the opportunity they're getting. And look, we know what we're going to get with Nick White, but you've still got to go on the field and play well and consistently play well. And you do get that with Nick White. He's an experienced campaigner, has a great kicking game, which I think will be great moving forward in the Northern Hemisphere. Having his kicking game is really good. And that's not to say Tate isn't a great kicker, but, you know, Nick White, it's a real good strength of his. And then, you know, I even look at Tate McDermott on the weekend when he came on, you know, the likes of him, O'Connor, you know, Swain and Samu, he can come on in that to their last 20 minutes and really impose himself when defences are real tired. So, you know, Tate McDermott can do that coming off the bench, and then so can Nick White. So they're in a real great position, very similar to the All Blacks. You know, we talked around Brad Webb and TJ Perenara, who we thought should start. So you could go either way with those two. And TJ's obviously got the front running in that department at the moment. But, you know, it's not much between those two. And, you know, Tate's probably going to get another opportunity moving forward. But I think you can't lose with both of them because both of them play well starting. And then when they both come off the bench, they're doing the same role that they should do, really giving themselves and their team great opportunities due to the impact of them and their injection coming on when they are coming off the bench.
And then there's Kirtley Beale, Jibber. There's a chance that if the Gittor rule, which from my memory is 70-plus tests allows an overseas player to continue to play for the Wallabies, is going to slightly be loosened. And they could have Kirtley Beale as well. That's the three amigos all back in that side as older, smarter blokes. It's dangerous.
Well, yeah. I mean, the redemption story, I suppose, of Quaid and James and you know, potentially Kirtley coming back. Quality player, playing extremely well over in France. So he would add to their depth stock, but also bring a lot of, I suppose, experience from over the years to spread throughout the group. And I think they're finding the benefit of that, of having guys like Quaid and James back in these environments to do that. And he would only add and enhance that. And the fact that he's over there, you know, and has the ability to join them will be exciting for him, but also exciting for them to have someone of his skill set and expertise. Because, you know, I don't know how much French footy is being watched, but he seems to be, by all accounts, making every post a winner.
Mann's the other one, looking to return this weekend. Jibber, what does he bring to that Wallabies mix?
Oh, look, I've watched a bit of him in the Japanese top league, and he's sort of like a Dalton Papali'i, you know, like I think he could be like a 6, 7, or 8, you know, maybe in that Pocock mould when Hooper was and Pocock were going when they made the World Cup final. He could go at 8, he could go at 6, he could go at 7. He's a great exponent over the ball at the breakdown, so he definitely adds to their depth and ability there to get breakdown turnovers. He's a great link man. He's got a huge engine. He'll always be in support play up. You know, defensively as well, bringing that line speed pressure, and he's just a physical big body. Like I mean with Dalton, like they don't have a lot of respect for themselves. They just chuck themselves into everything and look to win every collision. So he's a big piece to the puzzle, I believe, in terms of their loose forward makeup.
Now, this time last year, we were talking about Argentina's resurgence, not Australia's resurgence. They'd put in the hard yards. They'd gone to Australia. They'd stayed there when South Africa wouldn't come and play in the Rugby Championship. They picked up that win against the All Blacks, which was so famous. This year, we're not talking about them as much. They're not the story. To the point where there was a captain's call on Friday, where the three players from the Wallabies, the All Blacks, and the Springboks, the captains, all got together for a photo shoot with a trophy, and the Argentines weren't given the call. And Mario Ledesma's pissed off, as you could imagine, about that, that they're being overlooked. Bryn, do you feel that the Argentinians have got a fair point here, that really they're kind of being left to the side?
Oh, I think if that's the example we're using, and that, you know, that communication was cut between the Argentinians not knowing that that was happening, then you could probably you definitely could agree with that decision, and how they could feel the frustration through that. But I actually don't know the story behind it, but I can't imagine it was done on purpose. Whether there's just been a fall through around the communications to getting it to them, then it's not great for that happening. But the Argentinians have gone through a lot to be here, and it's not an excuse for them, and but being able to not play consistent rugby, and a lot of their guys, not being playing with the Jaguares, for the last year, it's really tough for them. And yes, they are playing overseas, but talking about preparation time, and not getting that right. And to be honest, they've been their own worst enemies as well. Discipline's been massive with them, and not being able to get their flow of their game on the weekend as well. Kremer, got sinbin and had two costly penalties due to his ill discipline, and they're giving away a lot of penalties. You look at the All Blacks when they played the All Blacks, consistently high number counts of penalties. And so, when you consistently keep giving that ill discipline and giving good teams, whether that be, South Africa, Australia or New Zealand, you're going to get on the back foot due to those opportunities that you're giving to those teams. And so that's probably the biggest issue that I've seen with them at the moment, just the ill discipline and not being able to sustain pressure due to the decision making around how many penalties they're giving away. So, but to come back to your point, Ross, around that story, it's not great. And hopefully, there was just a communication area around getting that out, because you could feel, all three teams there by the Argentines. So hopefully it was just a communication area. But, talking about rugby, they've probably been their own worst enemy just due to their ill discipline and not really playing the Argentinian rugby that we do know when they do play. They're hard to stop, but just haven't had many opportunities due to that.
Jibber, do you think they're far off where they were last year?
Well, look, I think Bryn probably touched on a key point there, and I'm going to go back to our old mate Ben Darwin and the cohesion factor of the Jaguares, and the fact that they were running hot together as that group, and then that filtered through to when they played together, obviously for Argentina, and they just were running a hot wave of form across a number of players, but it was a group that had played a lot of footy together in that space of time, and that's what it looked like. Whereas on this occasion, now they've gone back to separate clubs, and it looks like a team that's sort of trying to catch up. I don't think they've lost their skill set or ability, but they just don't have that cohesion of knowing what their mate's going to do inside and outside of them, and that's sort of causing a few errors, but also not allowing them to get that flow of play of their offload game, their kicking, attacking, kicking game, and playing that off-the-cuff footy that, we've spoken about before, that is, you're sort of like, where did that come from? But for them, it's so instinctive and natural when they know each other, others' games inside and out. And I think that's probably where they're not quite hitting the mark, because I still think their set pieces sound and, they're rolling maulers, but defensively and in phase play attack, they're just not cohesive, as I mentioned before, with our old mate Ben Darwin.
It's difficult, isn't it? Because when you look at the way that they've got rugby set up in their country, you used to have one professional team and then completely amateur underneath the Juarez. They're at a point now where basically there are no professional players in their country. They can't do the camps that the All Blacks do mid-Super Rugby. They can't have that connection that the Wallabies get with their players. They're at such a big disadvantage now, aren't they, Bryn?
Yeah, they are. And I think we talked around the Australians and the domestic competition as a work on for them moving forward. We talked around the ghetto law and the positive and the negative of having that. The the most important thing for Australia is to be able to have that depth in schools and, you know, a Bunnings Cup kind of set up to be able to make them better. But, you know, like this Argentinians are just at a complete massive disadvantage due to the fact that Jaguares have left the competition because, you know, they played in that final in 2019 and the majority of that Jaguares team was in the Argentinian team. So, you know, that cohesiveness and being able to play together consistently on the road, being able to build friendships, camaraderie, detail, and you talk around cohesiveness, you know, when you're together for a long period of time, for a 4 or 5 month season, and then it flows on to the Argentinian season, it's those kind of those times that you get in training to be able to iron things out, have conversations outside of rugby, looking at the same thing with the individual groups that you need to, whether you're an inside back pairing or you're the loose forwards or the tighties together, that time they miss out. And so they do have to play a lot of catch up. So it is unfortunate that they haven't been to be able to be a part of that Super Rugby competition because, you know, you look at the Sunwolves and they probably, not going to say warranted leaving the competition, but just due to the fact that they weren't delivering on the field. But you look at the Jaguares and the competition that they were putting in, you're playing in a Super Rugby final for against a tough competition and playing us in that 2019 campaign and giving it a good go. It was just a flow on for them to be able to make it that transition a lot easier into that international realm. And that's when you saw better performances of them, you know, beating the All Blacks and being able to play a lot better. So, you know, I'd like to think hopefully the powers that be in the Argentine Rugby Union Association can try and sort out some kind of plan to get their players together, whether that's a two-week camp that they can come together and talk around their clubs to be able to let them get released to come and play. Because look, they are at a disadvantage. You know, the Wallabies, South Africans, probably the South Africans had a bit of trouble before. They're not playing a lot of test match footy, but definitely the Australian and New Zealand are at an advantage being able to have those camps, play Super Rugby teams together, and being able to get that cohesiveness that Ben Darwin loved to use as well.
So, Jipper, they've had a few weeks together now. Cohesiveness, will there be enough to maybe knock off the Wallabies this weekend?
Oh, mate, I think there's two sides on the field, isn't there? They are definitely improving, I think, but the Wallabies are going from strength to strength. They're certainly not out of the running. Like, there was sort of missing those penalties that we're not used to seeing. RG's miss could have created some scoreboard pressure, which maybe put the Wallabies in a position to chance their arm and could have led to a few errors. I know that's not how it played out, but if they're going to go for threes and not for the corner, then they need to be nailing those so that they can tick their scoreboard over, but also creep up next to the Wallabies or even pass them to put them under pressure that puts them in a position they haven't been in for a few weeks. And then I think you'll see, you know, that's when the RG boys will come into their own because they've got nothing to lose. And when they're in that nothing to lose mindset, it's all on for young and old and really enjoyable to watch. So I don't think you can ever write them off, but they're going to have to be a lot more accurate in key parts of their game. You know, I've spoken about that, obviously taking their points when offer, but, you know, being accurate around their breakdown and their defence, and Bryn sort of touched on it, as their discipline, not giving the Wallabies easy opportunities into their half to, you know, put them on their defensive line and have to make 20-odd tackles before they eventually go over.
I think it is. This could be seen as a banana skin game as well for the Wallabies. And look, they've had three test match wins in a row and have some real good form and been able to make some massive changes in the last couple of test matches. But, you know, they are going overseas and a lot of those players have played a lot of minutes consistently. You look at the likes of, you know, Karevi's come back and played some great footy, but the likes of Ikitau, Michael Hooper as well has played a lot of footy. And so there has been a lot of players that have played a lot of footy. So, you know, you do want to give your squad an opportunity to be able to have changes, and they could, moving forward, they might have a few changes that might come in there. And so I think it's going to be a good test for the Aussies to see if they can finish off the Rugby Championship in style, because they've done so much great work around the learnings and the great results. Two wins against South Africa, a gutsy performance against an Argentinian side where they were given opportunities and, you know, did enough to be able to win comfortably. But I think moving forward into the British and Irish, not the British and Irish Lions, the India Tour, I think them getting a win and finish this campaign in a four-match test series win span, I think it's going to be really important for them. So it could be a banana skin game because, you know, there have been moments in the past where they've played really well and then they miss one game and they do lose due to just being off a little bit. And I think what Gypsy is really important, do not rest on or be complacent when it comes to an Argentinian team that has nothing to lose. And I can imagine, you know, there'll be posters around with how much disrespect they've been felt around, you know, that example that you had, Ross, and just not take them for granted, because they're a team when they do get it right. It's going to be a tough encounter if the Australians don't see that and aren't at 100% mentality-wise coming for this last test match of the Rugby Championship.
Okay, and the big match, the All Blacks versus the Springboks, the rematch this weekend after what was such an incredibly close tussle in the end, if not slightly divisive on people's opinions. Chipper, where do you see this one going?
Well, look, I still think the All Blacks will win. And namely, I think there'll be an improved performance at the breakdown, set piece, and their handling areas. You know, obviously 10 breakdown turnovers plus 24 handling errors 34 times in an 80-minute game, you're giving the ball back to the opposition, is going to put you in a position where it's very hard to win test matches, especially against top oppositions, the world champions that are the Springboks. So I think we'll see a slicker All Blacks outfit this weekend, which will give them the edge. And I don't think we'll see too much change from the Springboks tactics, because if you look at it on the surface, it worked for the most part and nearly gave them the ability to win this test match. And if they can keep up that accuracy with their defence, I think they should be looking at the concerns they had with the All Blacks breaking them back through the middle after their rush D forced them back inside. The defenders on the inside buttoning off once the ball's gone past them, they'll be wanting to shore up that. Another close encounter, I said it last week, styles make fights. Both these teams like bringing their best out against each other, and by that I mean their best brings out a few errors in each other as well. So it'll be another tight contest, but I think the All Blacks will get home in Gold Coast.
Andrew?
Yeah, I think it'll be another close encounter, but I think, you know, probably the things that the All Blacks are probably going to work on is around, you know, their turnovers. We're not going to see 23, 24 turnovers again. I think, you know, they're going to make the adjustments when it comes to that line speed pressure that the South Africans did bring in, but whether that's just with a little bit more depth, a few attacking kicks maybe early off lineouts or scrums, or even possibly a crossfield kick as well. There were a couple opportunities that there were opportunities to be able to do the crossfield kick, and not just off 10 as well. I think if they do give it to that second pivot, with Davey in behind, you know, Davey's got a great kicking game, and so if that communication is coming in from the wingers or that loose forward out on the edge, and if Bodie isn't going to kick it, the opportunity for Davey to be able to kick that crossfield kick or using his kicking game of attacking kicks, because he's done it so well at Crusaders level at 15 or at 12. And then I think for the South Africans, a lot won't change with how they do that. I think their discipline is something that they need to work on. You know, they've given away 5 yellow cards in the last 3 games, so being able to give, you know, the All Blacks opportunities, and not just the All Blacks, but the last couple of test matches, having 10 minutes off with 14 players, put yourself under stress to be able to then slow up your game a little bit more. And we might see a little bit more of them going down a little bit more, which they is a ploy that they do have. But, you know, the All Blacks will have to be able to adjust to that, because I think, look, they don't want to be playing at a high tempo. They want to be able to slow the game down to their level to be able to play at a pace that they want it. And scenes that we saw on the weekend, you know, the All Blacks weren't able to get into their game due to the fact that the kick execution from Fuff de Klerk was on. They slowed down the game. The All Blacks couldn't get their game going, and it led to their turnovers with, you know, 23 turnovers. So I think they will get a lot better with the All Blacks around their skill execution and probably adjusting to the line speed pressure that the South Africans did do on the weekend.
More kicking. more kicking.
Start embracing it. There's so much we can talk about. We're talking about so much with the amount of detail that we're giving to our viewers and understanding of two sides of rugby. Styles make fights, mate.
That's right. Alexander Usyk will say that to you after beating Joshua on the weekend. They do make fights, and I mean, it made it interesting, it made it gripping, it made it all of those things. But please, Dagny Nabu, if you're out there, can you please pass the ball past 9, past 10, possibly 12, you're in 13, and if really at a push, maybe give the ball to my pimpy. That's all I ask. Just once.
Yeah, we've got a couple more shows to change Ross, mate. We've got a couple more shows to change him. Because I'm enjoying it. I'm enjoying the encounter. I'm loving it.
Mate, they execute it just as well. They'll be enjoying it too.
Yeah, I know. More of it to come. Well, thank you, everyone, for tuning in again to the Aotearoa Rugby Pod. Thank you to Bryn. Thank you to James. We'll catch you all again next week. Fingers crossed. Some running rugby. Matewa.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Hey, folks, it's Mark Maron from WTF. I've been talking to all kinds of famous people in my garage since 2009, including a sitting president.
You know, I don't imagine you were flying in here on the chopper thinking like, you know, I am nervous about Mark.
No, I wasn't.
Okay, well, that's good.
That would be a problem.
It would be a problem.
If the president was feeling stressed about
coming to my garage.
Coming to your garage.
And now there's even more WTF when you subscribe to the full Marin to get weekly bonus content and all WTF episodes ad-free. Listen to WTF wherever you get podcasts and subscribe to the full Marin at go.acast.com/WTF.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.